Hey, are you ready to move your life? I mean, really move it? It's time to turn up the dial on your energy, your health, your sport performance, your happiness, and your relationships. If you want to live with more freedom, more adventure, more passion, more fun, and more success, if you're ready to get your brain in the game and achieve the most out of every area of your life, then it's time to move to live and live to move with your host, Jill Summers.
Hello, you made it, you're here, you are in the right place if you're ready to dial up your life. This is Jill with Jill M. Summers Performance Coaching. This podcast is designed to guide and coach and support and challenge you to live your life out loud, way out loud. This is part two of the Rudy's Road to Kona series, where we will be following Ruth Paines, aka Rudy's, journey on her way to competing in the Ironman World Championships in Kona, Hawaii on October 14th, 2017. And there's a little special something about that date. We were gonna talk about it on the last one. We didn't get to it, but we're gonna talk about it today, I promise. So hang in there with us. We promise to bring you the real story of training for Ironman, and not just the fluff or the everything is great part of the journey, but the highs and the lows, along with the gratitudes and the challenges and the insights, along with some sneak peeks on what some of the things that Rudy incorporates for both physical and mental training to manage this kind of challenge. So welcome, Rudy.
Thanks.
And thank you from the bottom of my heart for being here again today for part two.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. It's been really fun to see some of the responses you've gotten on Facebook and amazing support.
Yes. Yeah. It's really been fun for me, too.
Yeah. I read your Facebook page the other day. I'm like, oh, my gosh, look at all these people. And I know, you know, one of the when Rudy and I were talking about the potential of doing this, there's this sort of fear like, oh, God, you know, I'm putting it out there for all to see. And one of the things that I reminded is, and in the process of doing that, you're also putting yourself out there for all to support.
Right, right,
so
right.
It was so cool to see that. Like, I was all goosebumpy when I saw that. So that's fun. So here's what I want to do. I just want to encourage our listeners to, you know, take in this information, of course, but more than anything, remember that, you know, Rudy is this true, real-life person, and this is a challenge that is always better met with support from people who've been there before you, as well as people who don't know anything about it, and then everybody in between.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, I love that.
One of the beauties of this, having put it on Facebook, was the connections that have grown with people that I've known from all facets of my life that I didn't expect.
Ah.
I mean, over 20 years ago, someone who I knew when I lived in Wyoming, and we haven't spoken. I left Wyoming in 95. And so we haven't spoken since then. And she's like, it's so great to hear your voice. And I was like, oh, wow.
Listen, I know Facebook gets a bad rap sometimes about, you know, whatever. But I think it's really
there
this amazing really, gift.
Yes, there
that
are some
has
great gifts.
Allowed
it.
Us to stay connected like that.
Yes.
Yes. So shout out to Facebook. They're not paying me, I promise, to say that. but I get to keep in touch. And, you know, even some people we don't keep in touch with, I at least get to see what they're doing in their lives. And I love that. I think it's really fun. So shout out to Facebook. So how are things going with you since our last interview? Bring us up to speed, kind of a nutshell, and then we'll kind of dive in a little bit later.
Sure. Things have been a bit different since the last time. I spoke about the hamstring just minimally, the injuries that I've been dealing with, or the niggles. I used to call
them. The niggles.
I called them niggles before. Right. Niggle sounds a lot less serious than an injury.
Is that a real word? What did you make it up? What is it?
Someone made it up for me a long time ago, and I adopted it. I love it. And so that the plantar fasciitis, we were taking a few weeks off from running for that, and that helped me actually to give my hamstring more of a break, which had been bothering me. But last weekend, I had a tough bike ride, and so the hamstring kind of bothered me a little bit more. And so since then, a few things have changed that we'll get to later.
Okay.
It's been challenging.
Some physical challenges. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know this, but I'm assuming there's probably some mental challenges that go along with that because tend to be connected for sure.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so we are definitely going to dive into that, but before we do, last time we talked about a song, and in the moment you're like, oh, I know it, but I can't quite think of the name of it, so inquiring minds really want to know, what is this Queen song that lights you up?
Well, what's really funny is I never knew the name of the song, so once I looked it up, I was like, no wonder I didn't know the song. It's called Don't Stop Me Now.
Don't Stop, that's appropriate, right?
It sure is.
Don't stop me now. Okay, so listeners, here's what we're going to do. This is kind of a fun little thing. We're actually going to go into this song, and this is going to help you get into the mode of Rudy here. But before we do that, what is it about the song that lights you up, that kind of speaks to you?
Well, first of all, like I said before, Freddie Mercury is just awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, his energy is incredible. I know very little about him, but his passion on stage, I missed a great opportunity being born a little bit, I'm much younger than he was. He died at a young age, and I didn't really learn about him until after he died. And so I just love his energy and his passion and what little I know of him. Mm-hmm. So that is one piece. And the other is, it's just a rocking tune.
All right.
And so he's like, don't stop me now, and I'm not going to sing it for you. But it's really like, it just gets you moving and gets you wanting to go going. And I think it actually has... illegal drug references in it, and so that I didn't, that's not the part that really like spoke to me, but his passion and his the speed at which he's moving in the song makes me want to go fast.
All right, you guys, so here it is. We're gonna listen to this right now so that you can get into that energy, and we'll come back to the interview.
Having a good time. I'm a shooting star leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity. I'm a racing car, passing by like Lady Godiva. I'm gonna go, 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 there's no stopping me. I'm burning through the sky, yeah. 200 degrees, just while they call me Mr. Fahrenheit. I'm traveling at the speed of light. I wanna make a supersonic man out of you.
I'm like all jazzed up now. I'm ready to go. So sorry, listeners, if we like start talking at warp speed. But it's so amazing to witness that kind of passion in other people.
Yes.
I absolutely love that. And I found myself over the last number of years getting more and more drawn to people who have that kind of passion, because it lights me up and it makes it so much easier for me to have that too. Otherwise, I feel, last time we talked a little bit, sometimes I can feel like a lone boat out on an endless sea. But if I can start filling my sea with more of that, and that's really just a conscious thing, right? It's taking this desire that I have moving in that's like in the back of my mind, going, oh wait, I'm gonna pay more attention to that because I want more of that, and I'm gonna do that on purpose.
Yes, that comes to me. My first experience of reading about that came from a book that I'm going to have trouble remembering. Eat, Pray, Love.
Oh, yes.
Okay?
Yes.
When she is in the depths of her darkness before she starts
before she
to
travels.
Find her way out. She's like on the bathroom
yeah.
floor
yeah.
and something excites her. There's something. And she's like, I just have to keep pulling on that little thing. And that's the thing that's going to help me come out. And
yeah.
I loved that.
I love that.
I love
too.
That imagery. Find that little thing that's going to help you move just that next step forward.
Yeah. It's just feel a little bit better
yes.
than you were feeling. And all of a sudden, there's this
yeah.
huge catapult emotion. And, you know, finding those people out there that help do that for us, I think is so key.
Yes.
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 You know, last time in our interview, we talked about fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned a quote that basically states that anything worth accomplishing always happens in the face of fear.
Mm.
So I'm going to share just a short little story about me. Enough about you.
That's awesome. Amen. Take it, Jill. I'm going to hear your story.
Yeah, I want to hear my story.
Please tell me your story.
So in light of this fear thing, about it took me about 8 years to sign up for Ironman. And I realized, you know, in retrospect, when I look back on it, I'm like, what was that all about? You know, why did it take me that long? And what I realized is there was a lot of fear that I was having about, am I good enough? Can I be dedicated enough to the training? Would I actually make it through the day? Am I smart enough to be able to push other things aside, other distractions aside, and be able to really commit and sacrifice to
right.
the training and the racing? Did I have enough money? You know, it's
right.
not a cheap sport. Can I break the barriers in my mind? So I was a sprinter. And, you know, I always said, I'm a sprinter. And so to come in and go, well, what if you weren't?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what if you could be this other thing that looks pretty freaking cool.
Wow.
And I really had to challenge that thought, but God, all the fear that
yes.
that brought up. And, you know, in retrospect, looking back now, I'm able to see that despite all that fear, and it was a significant amount of fear, Ironman ended up being one of the most amazing life-changing events for me.
Yes.
And I'm starting to see more and more that the amount of fear is equal to the amount of, or can be, to the amount of payoff. So it's
yes.
like the more payoff there is, the more fear there probably is in the beginning. So I'm
yes.
curious, this is all leading up to a question, I promise. Wait for it. what fears are you aware of in the past as you've been building up to this journey?
Okay.
And then the second part is, what fears are you aware of going into World Championships, Kona?
Okay.
At this point, you know, there's always clarity on the other side when you look back.
Right, right, right. And once you make it through, say, a particular fear, a new one arises.
Yeah, yeah.
It's never ending. So the first in the past, you said.
Yeah, let's start with the past. You know, before, kind of while you were in the midst of this Ironman journey moving
okay.
forward.
Well, a great fear was, and this happened when I first decided to sign up for the Olympic distance, when we talked about having to make choices
mm-hmm.
and saying no to things. So the first fear was, what's going to happen to my friendships?
Mm.
And because I won't be giving as much to them, I won't be saying yes, like I said before.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's going to happen with that? So there was a fear there. And then as time went on, that became allayed. Everything was fine. I was actually doing what I loved and spending my time doing what I loved. And so it was okay if certain things weren't happening anymore, because it turned out that those weren't the things I really wanted to be doing anyway. So that was great, but it took a little risk to figure that out.
Yeah.
Then as Ironman began to take shape, the fear was, well, what does Linda think about this? Is she okay with this? This is something I really want to do.
And Linda is?
My partner.
Okay.
And having the fear that maybe she's not okay with it. And how are we going to deal with that?
Mm-hmm.
And there were some real differences, especially in the beginning, where I was worried about the time I was going to spend training. I don't think that was as much her worry as, am I going to die doing this?
Yeah.
And so once we like kind of worked that out, and I was like, I'm not going to die doing this. Or if I do, I'll die happy.
die doing the thing I love doing.
Yeah. So we worked through that, which was a process. The next fear is, I think, I find it has been common in talking to other people in partnerships, is the amount of time.
Mm, it is a challenge.
And that I go to sleep really early.
Yeah.
And I won't tell you how early. And Linda's best productive time is at night.
Uh-huh.
And so rarely do we go to bed at the same time. And we definitely do not wake up at the same time. And so that's been a real process. Doesn't a marriage look like this, uh-huh, in quotes? Like where you go to bed at the same time, you have dinner together every night, you have breakfast in the morning, and then, you know, maybe I'll send her off to work or something. But anyway, you have in your mind this image of what it's supposed to look like, what, yeah, any partnership is supposed to look like. And so we had to keep breaking. Ours, obviously, it doesn't, I'm with a woman, so it doesn't look like what I grew up thinking,
sure,
a partnership looked like. Anyway, so that's already blown out of. So we're constantly seeing and experiencing and reworking what a partnership looks like to us.
Right.
What is life-giving.
Making it your own.
To mm-hmm. us. Yeah. So that was a challenge.
In some ways, being in a relationship with a woman, which is non-quote-unquote traditional, right? It almost, I would think, might be easier because you're already working on a new template versus working on something that you've witnessed or seen.
Right.
For so many years.
Which is, it's funny that you say that because I've had people say that to me many years ago and it never made sense to me. I just didn't think of, because I grew up in my mind thinking so traditionally,
mm-hmm,
that the only thing that wasn't traditional was that she's a woman. That was the only thing in my mind.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, not obviously, but over time I've learned, actually, it's much more than that.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, that's just an interesting.
Yeah, we could do a whole podcast on that, right?
Right. So dealing with the, like, well, what is my time? What is her time? What is our time? And how do we, that has been a great challenge. Difficult,
mm-hmm,
but we made it through that. I mean, it's really clear. Her support, like, it's unbelievable. Like, most of the time, I feel completely free to do what I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a big deal. It makes a workout so much more fun and enjoyable, and I look forward to them. And if I don't feel particularly free, it's not her fault. It's how I'm perceiving, as we all experience, overwhelm on a particular day.
Yeah.
Other commitments, other things that come up, other desires to do other things sometimes, and how those are competing.
Mm.
But most of the time, there's a freedom, and there that is directly linked to my love for the sport,
yeah,
and for Ironman.
I love your self-reflection in that because you very clearly said, if I'm not feeling that freedom, more times than not, it's because of my own thought process, my own limitations.
Yeah.
You know, I when I was training, I had so many things that I was juggling that I commonly felt when I was training that I should be home with my daughter.
Yes.
If I was with my daughter, I should be working. If I was working, I should be cleaning the house. If
right.
I was cleaning the house, I should be training. So there was this constant struggle in my mind.
Yes.
And at that time, I didn't have the skills and the practices I have in place now to help quiet that monkey brain that we
right.
that we commonly talk about in mindfulness. Yes. Can you tell us what some of the techniques you use are, that didn't come out very well. What are some of the techniques you use to help quiet some of that, some of your own monkey brain or the chaos that can happen in there?
Are you saying I have a monkey brain?
No, I'm saying you look like a monkey. No. No, smell like
it's
a monkey.
So good.
No.
I'm not whispering for you, Leah, just so you know. So what I started meditating years ago and found it to be a great gift. And the gift of meditation was, so the process that I've learned is, when you breathe out, the idea is that you follow your breath. Then there's a pause. The in-breath is more passive, and you follow again the out-breath. And when you realize that your mind has gone somewhere else besides focusing on the breath, then you come back to the breath. And the best part for me about this is that I learned that when you come back with gentleness.
Mm.
It's very easy to be like, "Ugh, I did it again. My mind is everywhere," and to be frustrated by that.
Mm-hmm.
But the teaching is to come back with gentleness.
I love that.
I do too.
Oh my gosh.
Who wouldn't want to meditate if you're spending 20 minutes
beating yourself up?
Right, but you want to meditate because you get 20 minutes to be gentle to yourself. Like, if my mind's going to go like 50,000 times, that's 50,000 opportunities to be gentle.
And now listen to this. So I'm going to say something that's not gentle at all, but it's like, and what the heck? We have to practice that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, my judgment is like, oh, come on. I'm so disappointed in us as humans that we have to, like, practice being gentle.
Right.
That's an interesting
thing to contemplate, right?
It is.
Right?
Yeah.
But what a gift to have this opportunity to come back to gentleness.
Mm-hmm.
So my practice is to meditate daily. And in December, I decided I'm ready to commit to meditating every day. I was picking it up more often last summer and into Ironman and beyond, and I was motivated to do it. My main motivation was because of my realization of my monkey mind.
Mm.
So I realized that I was making up stories about things, and it was hurting me.
What kind of stories? Can you give us an example?
Let me think about that for a minute.
Okay. I know I'm really putting you on the spot here.
But we can come back to that. But what I wanted, though, was to be free of those stories.
Mm.
I wanted to come back and be able to approach the situations that these stories were a part of with more clarity and less of my insecurities and my sensitivities and more with reality.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I wanted. Meditation is a non-negotiable in my life because I easily misinterpret. And
how do you think meditation helps you misinterpret less?
So, because meditation helps me focus.
Okay.
So if I am focusing on the out-breath, it's focusing on the present moment. Mm-hmm. Nothing else. Okay.
Not the stories.
No stories.
Not the past.
Nope.
Not anxiety about tomorrow.
Exactly. And I will share then how it impacts my training, like a training session in particular. If I'm doing short, very hard intervals on the bike, short, but not short enough to keep my focus. Okay, so where my mind is going to wander a little bit. I have found that when I'm in the midst of that really tough, I might last for 5 seconds or for 10 seconds, say of even a 30 second interval. I might last for 5 or 10, right in there, giving everything I've got. And then my mind goes, my body starts to hurt and I start to think of, when is this going to be over? And then I come back to the meditation. I come back to the present moment. It doesn't matter. What matters is this second, this pedal stroke, this moment.
So a lot of people think meditation is just sitting still on a cushion with your knees crossed and, you know, can you talk more to the listeners about the truth of that, but then also what's an expanded truth of that? Because you're telling us that you use it in motion.
Yes. Yeah. So, okay, now the truth of the cushion is that's my practice. That's where I get to practice coming back to the present so that when I'm in a more difficult situation, maybe I've practiced enough that I might have an auto reflex
to come
back to the present. That's why I meditate. It's for the auto reflex.
I get it.
It's for the bonus of being gentle to myself.
Yeah.
And the auto reflex, and hopefully that auto reflex, I'm going to be gentle too.
Are you?
I work on it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's my goal. And so I would say that yes, it happens sometimes, and I wouldn't know when it doesn't happen because I'm not aware of it yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you become aware of it, you come back.
Yeah. Right. It's when you don't become aware of it that you go down the rabbit hole and all of a sudden...
You got all kinds of stories going
on. All of a sudden you're like, well, then that person doesn't like me and that
reminds
me of kindergarten when my kindergarten teacher, right? It's the craziest thing. You know, that's a true brain function. That isn't just like us being odd.
Right.
And I think actually I'm going to take a moment to talk a little bit about that if you don't mind.
Please.
Because people need to understand that that is the way our brains work. You know,
right.
We have an
and
archaic,
it's okay.
Yeah. We have this archaic part of the brain, the limbic system. Now, I'm not a brain specialist, but it's an archaic part that it wants to keep us safe, you know, and it kind of wants to point out the things that will hold us back because that keeps us safe.
Right.
We stay in the familiar. And so it looks for all the negative things, really, all the limiting.
Mm-hmm.
And it wants to be right. And so it might start with, oh my gosh, in this interval, my body really hurts.
Right.
And then it goes, I'm simplifying, but what are some of the other things that I can bring on board to make this seem even more real? So right now my body really hurts, which reminds me of that time last week when my body really hurt.
Right.
Which is similar to that time last year when my body really hurt and I pulled my hamstring and then I was out for 3 weeks.
Right.
And then that reminds me of, you know, back in high school when I had such and such happen. And all of a sudden it's like creating all these conglomerations of memories and stories to make it real in the moment.
Right.
Which doesn't help us.
Mm.
So what I love about what you're saying with the meditation practice is it increases our ability to be aware of what we're thinking in the moment so we can purposely, instead of reflexively, choose a thought that's going to work for us and move us forward as opposed to holding us back.
Wow. Right.
Right,
I'd have to hear you say that like 10 more times really sink into, but yeah, that's something to spend some time with.
And I guess my point is it's a very real function in the brain. It's not just us being like psychotic.
Right, right, which that completely resonates and I think is really important to say out loud and for us to take in, is that these are normal things that are going on, and we're just working, and we have the ability to change them.
We are so freaking smart. I mean, you know how smart we are.
Right.
And they say we don't use as much of our brain as we actually can. And there's a couple schools of thought about what that percentage is. But I think the most important thing is for us to understand that increased consciousness, mm-hmm. which comes from mindfulness practices such as meditation,
right,
fuels us to be more on purpose,
yes.
and living our lives in charge,
yes.
rather than just reacting and responding out of reflex.
Right.
Which reminds me of this story. I have to tell this story. So again, enough about you.
Is this about more naked men in the changing tent?
Oh my gosh.
That was a great story.
In the changing tent. This is actually about crickets in an aquarium.
Okay.
Are you familiar with this?
No.
Okay. So this is a very true science study. They put a bunch of crickets in an aquarium. And as you know, crickets jump up, right? And so they would jump up and jump out of the aquarium. And the next one would jump up and jump out of the aquarium. They go, well, we can't let them all jump up and get out because we're going to lose all our crickets. So they put a lid over the aquarium. So the crickets would jump up and they would hit their heads on the lid and they would drop back down. And they would jump back up and hit their heads on the lid and they would drop back down. They would do this numerous times before they were able to figure out just how high they could jump.
Oh, wow.
Before hitting the lid.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd jump back down or land back down, which is pretty cool. You know, their brains aren't as smart as ours and they still figured that out and didn't take all that long. So as crickets do, they would continue to jump, but they found this new high. They found their new ceiling.
Right. Okay. Right, right, right.
So after a period of time, they took the lid off the aquarium. And the crickets would jump to their ceiling and back down. Jump to their ceiling and back down. They never once jumped out of the aquarium.
Cool.
Because they had developed a new ceiling.
Right.
All their own.
Right.
So that's one of the things we do. We create ceilings for ourselves because somewhere along the way, we had learned that that was our limit.
Yeah. That's great.
So, what do we have to do,
right,
to burst through that self-imposed? This is an important part. The self-imposed ceiling, right?
Right. Yep.
What are some of the things that I'm so putting you on the spot?
Yeah.
I recognize that, but I have a feeling you're going to be able to manage this. By the way, everybody, there's this little beep going on in the background. Just ignore it. Because we're not going
to
stop.
Just go to gentleness when you hear
it.
Go
to gentleness. In fact, you know what? I have a really great mindfulness exercise. Every time you hear the beep, take a deep breath.
Nice.
Okay. So self-imposed limits.
Mm-hmm.
Are you aware of some self-imposed limits you've had in the past? Hmm. And how you've consciously moved through them? I did not prep her for this question. I know this is a tough question on the spot.
Okay. So we'll see how this fleshes out.
Okay.
Not to do with athletics in particular. Are you looking for athletics? Okay. I was a campus minister. I spent 10 years as a Catholic campus minister.
Okay.
And it was a great job. Super fun, and I was able, in my experience at that time, to be my total self, could be myself, and I got paid to be myself and hang out with amazing college students and do awesome stuff. Super fun. And yet through that, I realized I couldn't actually be myself when I realized that I was open to a relationship with a woman. And that was not going to fit into this chosen career.
Mm.
In that process, though, I was still open to, well, maybe I will meet my husband because anything can happen. And I believe that anything is possible, as Iron Man says.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2007, I was still working as a Catholic campus minister. And I decided, you know what? I'm going to close the door to women and I'm going to meet my husband this year. Hmm. And that that was, for me, my self-imposed limit. I'm closing the door to a relationship with a woman, and I'm going to meet my husband this year. And in 2007, Linda decided, I'm going to go visit Rudy this year. We hadn't seen each other in years. And she's like, I want to go visit Rudy. Well, she came to visit. She broke my limits. And through a good process of growth and discussion and everything else. And no longer were those limits the limits, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How has your life expanded?
Right.
Since breaking through that self-imposed ceiling?
Right. Right. Well, I didn't want to break that ceiling. I was very clear. And she was very respectful. I mean, we had known each other for over 10 years, 9 or 10 years at that point, and 11 years. And so, and very close. I mean, I just loved her to death. Just an incredible person. So there was a lot of trust there. I mean, I loved her dearly. She's an amazing person. But I didn't want to, you know, I had made that limit, and I'm, you know, thank you for expressing what you expressed to me. And, you know, it makes me feel really good, but I'm going to meet my husband. Working through that, I mean, I kept the door closed, not for very long, because how we worked through it, or how I worked through it is I just kept bumping into people that I loved tremendously and telling them about what was going on. And they were like, hey, can you see your face in the mirror? Do you see how happy you are when you say her name? Do you like, and I'm like, no, my life cannot change like this. You don't understand. I'm going to have to leave my job, my career.
Like, my faith.
Yeah. Okay. That is definitely something that has happened over time, but I didn't even think about it at that point. Okay.
Yeah.
My home, like I had chosen North Carolina as like, this is a great place for me. Like everything was going to change. And I couldn't, like, are you serious? I really have to do this. And one friend who we call the Holy Spirit, Katie Crow, said to me when I was trying to work through this with her, she said, Rudy, sometimes you have to get out of the way of the Holy Spirit. So in our religious and spiritual terms, the Holy Spirit was calling me beyond my limits. That's really cool, because I want to, at some point when we talk more about mindfulness practices, I can share more about the Holy Spirit and and how our relationship has grown over the years.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Really.
On
moving through that ceiling.
Yeah.
You know, we all have the ceilings.
Yeah.
And I think if we all were to do a little reflection, it would be a fun little practice or an insightful practice to sit down and take a look at what are some of our limiting thoughts. One of my limiting thoughts was, I'm a sprinter. I can't run more than 400 meters, you know. And certainly I have other limiting thoughts as well. I'd like to take that lid off my aquarium and jump on out of those. So switching gears slightly,
okay,
because I've brought this up a couple times, the first in the first interview and then again in the intro to this interview.
Yes.
You said that October 14th this year
is
a very special date.
It is.
Why is it special this year? And that's it. Why is it special this year?
Well, it is special because October 14th, 1989, is the day that Mark Allen and Dave Scott dueled for the world championship in Kona. And they had been on this they had been dueling for years, and Mark had always come up short. And on this day, Mark won. And so it isn't necessarily special to me because Mark won, although I might learn more and more and more and more about Mark and Dave, and it might that will change over time, especially as I get to hang out in Kona.
Cool.
With the spirit of Kona and the island and all that she has to offer. But reading their book, the book about them by Matt Fitzgerald called Iron War, just really kind of opened me up to their competition and their passion, what each of them brought to their races, and they just inspire me incredibly. And so I just think it's super cool.
That is cool.
That my race happens to be on October 14th.
Okay, so this is a really interesting question. This is a little light bulb while you were talking. You said that they dueled back and forth. Mm. And on this particular day, Mark Allen actually came out the victor.
Yes.
Which in the past he hadn't.
Never.
If there was a part of you that you could say was Mark Allen, and a part of you that is Dave Scott.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that part came up to be the victor. So the Mark Allen.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Would you be able to describe those two personas within you?
Yes. Yes. For sure. Because I feel, I can feel both of their spirits. So, Mark, when you read about it, and I need to read the book again because there's so much more. And Linda's reading it right now, and she'll talk about it. I was like, God, I don't even remember that. That is so cool. And it'll be relating to a practice she and I are doing right now, a spiritual practice. And so with Mark, how Matt describes him is a deeply spiritual guy. And that it is his spiritual practice that really enabled him to have just an intensely incredible experience that day. And where he had to really, and again, I'd have to read it again, but he really had to let go. So that resonates with me, but I wouldn't say I've done that.
Ah.
Not in a race yet. I may have done that in small ways, like I've come back to it. Let's say I've come back to the cushion, to gentleness throughout my races. Yet I think there's still that experience that eludes me right now. And so that's where Mark, I can feel Mark's presence. And Dave is he's just an athlete. I'm sorry, Mark, I know you are too, but Dave's just all about it. Like, and so the way he approaches training is exciting and passionate and just all out. And at least the way I took the description of him.
Right.
I mean, I don't know you, Dave, so I really, it'd be fun to get to know you.
Right.
And I love watching their interviews with Bob Babbitt. Breakfast with Kona is my favorite part of, that's an aside. So watching their interviews is really cool too. But that's what I sense more from Dave, is he's very more methodical, where Mark is, Mark reminds me somewhat of the approach we're taught through Team Sirius, which is the perceived exertion, you know, the sense. So now you're kind of let up, where you're like in the spirit, you're in this groundlessness more. When you're in this perceived exertion thing, it's more groundless than staring at your heart rate monitor and saying, oh, I need to bring it back down, or staring at your power and saying, oh, I need to bring it back up. And being focused on those numbers as opposed to the groundlessness of, am I working at the level that I can maintain for the entire time, or can I push a little more, or am I just a bit past that? And so that's
That's beautiful. Mm. And my guess is, you know, every person is different.
Right.
And so, and we're different in different times of our lives.
Right.
And so finding that approach that's going to work for you. But what I love about this conversation is I think that softer, more creative, that groundless piece that you're talking about is less discussed and less popular because people don't know about it necessarily. And I think there's probably more gray in there.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons I think as humans, we gravitate towards the science of heart rate and power is there's black and white.
Yes.
And less gray. So there's less subjective, what we would say, changes or measurements. And I'm sort of thinking out loud. So I think a lot of times people gravitate towards the black and white because there seems to be more...
So with that, you can measure. It's more, it's measurable.
Yes.
Okay. So I've done this and next week I'm going to do this. And if I don't hit this, then maybe we need to tweak some things and I'll hit this.
Right.
And there's an appeal. There's definitely an appeal. And I think there's a time for that too.
I do too. I think in some ways you have to experience some of that to understand what you're feeling subjectively.
Exactly.
And to go, I have felt this before when my heart rate was 150. I know that I can add 10.
Yeah. Okay. So a little plug for Ironman, for training for long distance.
Okay. Let's do it.
The plug is... When you said that, in terms of getting to know your body, like, okay, so now I know when my heart rate is in the 150s, I'm at about this. This is actually is closer to my half Ironman race pace or whatever. Having done this now, trained in this way for 7 years, I know my body in a way I never knew I could know my body.
Mm.
And how that, to me, is a plug.
That's
like,
cool.
How cool to have this opportunity to get to know
absolutely
my body. It becomes very clear how little I knew about my body, which is a very important part of who I am.
And what a great plug for the journey of training
for a long distance
like this.
Exactly.
So we're getting close to the end of our interview today. And about a month ago, I did an interview with Dr. Sarah Axtell, and
I loved listening to that.
Yes. She shared with us a practice that she does with her children around the dinner table and called the thorn bud rose. And the thorn is talking about something that is challenging you today. The bud is something you're looking forward to that's still kind of in its growing process. And the rose is a celebration. So in closing today, I'm going to ask you, what is your current thorn, your current bud, and your current rose?
Okay, so in full transparency, Jill let me know she was going to ask me this. So I've been thinking about it.
Good.
So, and I'm excited to talk about this because it's... all the same thing. And it's often that our suffering brings us our most joy.
Mm.
And you mentioned this earlier, and I can't remember exactly what you were talking about the level of challenge.
And fear.
And fear, right. Mm. The level of fear and success and how closely they're aligned, your experience of moving through that fear.
Mm-hmm.
So my current thorn is... that it continues, the hamstring issue is, last Saturday I had a normal bike ride, but it just wasn't it hurt a little bit more than I thought it should. And so I was really frustrated by it. And I think part of the frustration was the fact that it was just windy and I thought I was gonna have the wind at my back at one point and it wasn't ever at my back. So I think that probably played into it psychologically for me. And I have some really cool stuff to share about working through those little pieces.
Good, yeah, we need to hear those.
Yeah, I mean, that is just
I was
awesome
riding through
stuff.
The wind last weekend, too. I could have used this.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
So after that, I got in touch with my coach and said, I feel like I need some lighter workouts this week. because I want to give my hamstring a break. It's been able to work really hard through pain. It's been fine, but I was like, you know what, this time I want a little bit of a break. Well, she wrote back and said, you know what, it's important. I think you should take the whole week off. And I was like, what?
Wow, that's like unheard of in Ironman right. training, right?
Like, the whole week, what does that mean? And I didn't say, what does that mean? But she did say, you know, I'll put a few swims up. And so it'll be up to you whether or not you do those. And so, of course, my first thought was, well, I'm just going to exercise and not tell her. My senses came. I came back to my senses and decided that I'm gonna take a full week off, and or I'm gonna try each day. I'm gonna wake up and my intention is to take the week off. But if I get to a point where no one can stand being around me, I'm gonna go do. I'll get back in the pool. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge challenge to do that. And the biggest fear around that was knowing how to care for my body. When I'm exercising, when I'm training hard, of course I want to put the right food in. It feels better, all of that. Well, you know, when I'm not training, I want to feel good too. And this would be the first time, actually, I didn't say, great, I'm off. I'm going to have French fries and ice cream, and which are all great things. But I've come to realize they don't make my body feel really good. So I don't...
And you can't afford to not feel good when you're training like that.
Right, right. Or just in life.
Right.
Okay, I have the week off. So I could actually feel bad, but I don't want to feel bad.
Yeah, it's probably not the best for your healing to eat.
Exactly,
things.
That too. Yes. Right? Mm-hmm. And so that was a fear. That was a great fear.
Okay.
So it's been cool. I mean, I've made it, I've had some really funny, you know, I was at work yesterday and I was telling, some of the clients I was training, they're like, well, how's it going? And I was like, they're like, are you going crazy? And I was like, well, I don't know. You tell me. Am I okay to be around?
Well, you've got this great smile on your face. And even when you walked in today, I'm like, I wouldn't have known. Yeah. So I think you're managing it.
Yeah. So, and this is the first time I've taken a full week off since I can remember.
Wow.
Like, full week.
I know some of you Ironman athletes out there who are listening to this right now are like getting the hives just hearing you talk about taking a week off.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if I could tell the truth, when I told you I took the whole week off when I walked in the front door, the look on Jill's face was like,
what?
Are you kidding me? Like, how are you? Yeah. Are you okay?
Right? Like, I'm super good at that right now because I'm not in training. I got that down. But I can take myself back to those years while I was training, and boy, a week off would have flip me out.
Yeah.
How? Tell me, give us a hint. Not a hint. Give us one thing that you're doing mentally to be able to manage that.
So I went into it. All right. One thing I'm doing mentally to handle it.
Yeah.
I just go back to meditation.
Okay.
and we can go to the so it is thorn, bud, and when I get to the rose, I'll tell you, answer that better.
Great.
For you, if that's all right.
Good.
So then the bud. I can't wait to exercise again.
Wow.
I can't wait till Monday, you know?
Okay.
I will get in the pool. Well, I hope there's a swim scheduled for me on Monday. Usually Monday is a swim day. And so I'll get back in the pool again and look forward to getting on the bike next week. And then we'll just see. When the body is ready to run again, we'll run.
Okay.
So that's what I'm looking forward to. That is definitely the bud. And then the rose. And remind me what
a celebration.
Oh, the celebration. Right. So, well, one piece is that I've made it through. Mm. Okay, so today's Friday. To me, I've made it through. And holy cow, like I have Saturday and Sunday off still. I ride 4+ hours on the weekend. Mm. And then if I was running, I'd be running a bit on Sunday and swimming. And I can sleep. I can, we're going to like clean the rugs in our house tomorrow. I get to help.
Yay, I'm looking forward to cleaning the rugs. Wow, that's a whole other reality.
So to be able to have made it through this time and to feel healthy in it, I feel like something new is happening within me because I'm looking forward to swimming on Monday and biking next week, but I actually know I'm going to be okay if I don't have a swim on Monday or I don't have a bike. I'm going to be okay.
It sounds like you can correct me if I'm wrong, like there's a surrender, like a trust in the process.
Mm-hmm. And that is where we go back to the meditation piece too. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is where I keep learning about this and practicing so that I can surrender.
Yeah.
And trust. And so again, the rose also is this freedom on a daily basis. Like my routine in the morning is to take my coffee upstairs and sit with my kitty cat drink my coffee with intention. Sometimes my mind wanders, sometimes it comes back. Sometimes I feel the warmth of the cup in my hand. Sometimes I smell the coffee before I drink it. Sometimes I don't. And I'm like, oh, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. Oh, right. Mm-hmm. I want to be present. I get to see the change, the colors in the sky every morning. And when I'm done with my coffee, I spend time writing. And I've not had a limit on that time because I'm not rushing off to my workout. That's a big deal because it's allowed me to deal with the challenge of this and to look at it like so when I'm feeling tightness about something, I actually can sit and write about that and really take time to be honest with myself and sit with it and then keep working through it. And that's a great petal on the rose.
And what, you know, what that brings up for me as I'm listening to you talk about this is you could reflexively go into freak out mode because you're not working out for a week, which would be a common behavior for a lot of athletes.
Mm-hmm.
But you are consciously instead focusing on the beauty and the freedom that this time is providing for you.
Mm-hmm.
Both are true, but it's the one that you focus on that increases,
right?
Which is so
powerful. Says, Siri Lindley says, where your focus goes, your energy flows.
Yeah. And you know, my thought is your consistent practice of meditation has provided you the foundation upon which to do that.
Yeah.
To consciously choose where your energy goes, your thoughts go.
It's helping. It is certainly helping. I mean, there's like, what it also does is help you to see all the areas with gentleness.
With gentleness.
That you can continue to transform.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really good too. Last petal I want to talk about in relation to the rose is normally if I have a client I'm seeing at the gym, I'm working at the downtown gym, but I swim at the North Shore gym. So normally I like see a client and I've got to hop in the car and get to the gym so I can get my swim in so that I can get home and get on my bike or whatever it is. And without that pressure, so it's not just I'm not working out 15 to 20 hours a week. I'm also not driving all across the world to get the workouts done.
Right.
And I've been able to say hi to my coworkers.
Oh.
You know, and
connection.
Actually ask how they're doing.
Yes.
Everyone is so incredibly supportive of what I do and asks me all the time that to even have like 10 extra seconds to look at someone in the eye and ask them how they're doing, that's, so I'm grateful for that.
That's
too.
Great.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You bet.
So much for being here. I have a little gift for you.
Ah.
And I know our listeners can't see this, so I'm going to describe it a little bit. This is a ceramic piece, and it has the word trust in it. And so we've talked about trusting your journey and being able to surrender. And I just want to give this little something to you, because I really appreciate you taking the time and being here with us and sharing your journey, which can be, it can be a little scary and vulnerable. So.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I saw it sitting there, actually, and it was upside down, and I was like, what does that say? Mm-hmm. And I saw it say, it said trust, and I was like, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And now when I look at it, too, Rue is in the middle of trust.
Oh, yeah, baby. I knew that. I mean, I knew that. That's exactly why I chose it for you.
I love it. We won't say anything about rust.
No.
Well, we could say true.
May the rust like not be with you.
All right. Thank you very much, Jill.
You're welcome. Thank you. So just a reminder to the listeners, this is a series. This is part two of the series. We are going to continue following Rudy's journey as we move towards October. And watch for these. They're going to be coming your way. And you get to be up front and center when you sign up for the podcast. So if you are listening to this from my website, please go to that page and just put your name and your email into the corner on the right hand side, and you will get notification of when a new podcast comes out. If you're listening to this on iTunes, feel free to go to my website, jillmsommers.com. That's SOMMERS. And then go to the podcast page, and you will see that box, super easy to sign up for. In closing today, I just want to encourage all of you. Mm. We talked about the thorn, the bud, and the rose. Take a little time to just ask yourself, what's my thorn today? What's my bud? And what's my rose? And if you feel extra inspired, maybe even take a look at some of your own ceilings, your self-imposed ceilings that you've put on in your life, and ask yourself, which of those do I want to break through this year?
Mm.
Why not?
Awesome.
Why not?
Awesome.
And then fuel yourself with information and with other people that have done it before you.
Right.
Get inspired. Be supportive. You don't have to do it on your own.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Amen.
Yeah. So thank you very much for being here with us today. This is Jill with Jill M. Summers Performance Coaching. I'm grateful for you listening. We will see you on the next podcast.
Thanks for being with us today. We invite you to join us on our mission to move people forward and upward. Go to jillmsommers.com. That's jillmsommers.com for more information and to listen to other inspiring podcasts. And remember to do one thing today that moves your life forward, which impacts others around you to do the same.